Carl Hiaasen is with us. Carl Hiaasen has been writing a regular column, which at one time or another has ticked off just about everybody in South Florida, including his own bosses. His latest work, one of many novels, the latest is Razor Girl, from this fine gentleman, journalist, columnist, and man about town, Carl Hiaasen. Good to visit with you this morning.
Hey, Jim, how are you? I don't know about the man about town, but I like the rest of it.
Well, the book is by NPR. One of the reviews says, Vintage Hiaasen in the very best way, a darkly funny, unapologetically crazy, and more Florida than a flaming or a flamingo eating a Cuban sandwich while singing a Jimmy Buffett song. So that's a fine review for Mr. Carl Hiaasen. You've been doing this a long time. Your enthusiasm is infectious, and no doubt the creative juices are still flowing.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a nice ride, and there's plenty of material down here, down our way, and, you know, for inspiration. And I still do, you know, the newspaper column once a week, Jim, and that sort of keeps one toe in the newsroom. And then the rest of it is just kind of, you know, writing these novels. And I alternate between the grown-up books and the novels I do for kids. So it's a nice change of pace. And I've been very lucky. I mean, I've been blessed to have been born and raised in a place I care about. And it makes it gives you a little more energy to the writing when you feel that way.
Well, you have quite a style that blends humor with passion and certainly tackling the issues of the day. And I guess you're 23 years old when you start working at the Miami Herald. What was the catalyst for you as a journalist? Were there any role models along the way?
Well, yeah. I mean, when I got out of school, University of Florida, which has a terrific journalism school, and I got out right when Watergate was breaking. And all, you know, it was just, you know, we all thought our world was falling apart because it was, you know, the Saturday night massacre. You had Nixon firing the special prosecutor and an attorney general resigning and him refusing to cooperate with the courts or the Senate and the House. And so, you know, there was a huge constitutional crisis. But you also had the great Watergate journalism, you know, Woodward and Bernstein and the Washington Post. So everybody came out of school at my age very idealistic. About going out there, and you know, sort of, journalism was thought to be the Lord's work. You're trying to get the truth to the people of the United States from people who don't want to give out the truth. And in that sense, you know, it's never, the mission has never changed, but certainly journalism has changed. Their newspapers in particular are suffering, as you know, and shriveling up basically. And there's fewer and fewer resources to pay people like Woodward and Bernstein at a local level, you know, which is the most important journalism. Your hometown journalism mm-hmm. is the most important, and that's what's suffering.
Yep, there are fewer resources, fewer people, and there aren't many people like you who write columns and also write novels, and there are different approaches to this. I think you'd be the first to acknowledge. How do you do it?
Well, I got into the newspaper business because it was a chance to write every single day, and I love to write. And you learn about how the world works pretty quickly. And the Herald, Miami Herald, is a terrific newspaper. In those days, it was a big newspaper, sent you all over the place for a kid getting on a plane, going to cover, you know, the invasion of Grenada or whatever it happened to be, the drug wars that were going on. It was a great sort of encyclopedic learning experience, and what you find out real quickly is that only so much of it fits in the newspaper, and you've got all this other stuff you want to write, and all the sort of the inside stuff, and characters you bump into, which you realize when you meet them, they'd be great characters in a novel. So the novels became an outlet, and kind of a psychotherapeutic outlet too, because there is I was frustrated by what was going on in Florida. We have crime, we had the drugs, we had, you know, huge, serious immigration issues. We had, racial tension in Miami in those days and disturbances. I mean, it was a very tumultuous place. So if for me, the novels, which I was working on in my spare time at night, were just a great outlet. And I always like to write humor, and I thought this is the craziest place probably in the country right now, South Florida. And so they had to be funny, because that was the only way to survive, to get through it, was you had to have a sense of humor.
Well, this book is reflective of that. Mary Mansfield is the Razor Girl, and certainly an interesting character.
Yeah, she ran away with the story. It's one of the great selfish pleasures of writing your own novels is that you have ostensibly control of the story and the character, but every once in a while one of them comes along and sort of steals the spotlight. And she was just opens the book. She's a woman who's been hired to crash into another car and distract a guy who's wanted by the mafia. And so we have people in South Florida. I don't know if you have this scam in Louisiana and Mississippi, but in South Florida, we have people who crash cars on purpose for insurance scams. They're really good at crashing into other cars and not hurting anybody, but just, then they filed phony medical. Well, I sort of combined that with a real incident that happened down in the Keys where a woman driving crashed into a car full of tourists, didn't hurt anybody, but it wasn't a setup. It was a real accident, but she was doing some personal grooming at the time and was distracted. She was shaving while driving, if you can believe that. And it was I had this clipping, newspaper clipping on my corkboard for years trying to figure out how do I put this crazy thing into a book. So I just decided to open a book with that particular kind of car crash, and that was how the sort of Razor Girl got launched.
Well, and I've always loved the characters' names in your books. There is Lance Coolman. Lance Coolman. Tell us about Lane Coolman.
Lane is a Hollywood agent. He represents a reality TV star who has wandered and has gotten into trouble in Key West. So he's headed south, and he's in the car that Mary crashes into while she's got a razor in her hand. Uh-huh. And he's sort of a Hollywood talent manager, and this is the first big star he's had, and Buck Nance is the guy's name. And you mentioned in the intro, I mean, the reality show is it's called Bayou Brethren, and it's supposedly a bunch of sort of a rural family of chicken farmers in Louisiana. And, of course, being Hollywood, the guys who are on TV aren't really from Louisiana. They aren't really chicken farmers, but they look the part, and they... And the actual bayou is at a movie TV set in Pensacola. Uh-huh. So, but that's Hollywood. I mean, a lot of these reality shows are done. Mm-hmm. So I just was sort of making fun of the genre and sort of the trend, being from the South myself, and I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but there's sort of a national fixation with what's perceived as redneck culture if you're from the South. And there's rednecks in every state in the Union, but there's a perception that it's a Southern thing. And it's got that sort of flavor to it, and I'm fascinated when I travel about that. So I thought I got to work that into the book somehow, because it really is a sort of a national. If you look at reality TV right now, and I don't recommend it, but if you do, there's a lot of those kind of shows, guys wrestling alligators or moonshiners or whatever it happens to be. It's just like a trend.
Well. This is quite a ride, Razor Girl, with Carl Hiaasen, who tells stories as well as anybody in the business. And you note Buck Nance, and a listener asked if the Bayou Brethren are based in any way on Duck Dynasty.
Well, I intended it, interestingly, sort of as a Duck, a Duck Dynasty knockoff, sort of a cut-rate Duck Dynasty, because what happens in television is you had a hit show, there's 10 shows that imitate it as quickly as possible. So that's what I perceive Bayou Brethren to be. But even to Buck Nance, who is, as I said, sort of an outrageous character. I mean, they have to hire a Cajun dialect coach for the guy because he knows almost nothing about Louisiana, but he's supposed to be a Louisiana chicken farmer. but even in my wildest dreams, I would never have had him address the Republican National Convention. but when I turned on the television last summer, there's one of the Duck Dynasty dudes addressing the Republican National Convention. And I thought, this is better than fiction. This is better than satire, because if I had written in my novel for my character to do that, my editor would have sent the manuscript back saying, that's even too silly for you. That would never happen. But of course it has, and it did, and that's where we are right now.
The guest is Carl Hiaasen. If you'd like to talk to this gentleman, 877-217-5757, 297-5633 in Baton Rouge, and talk@talklouisiana.org. As mentioned, he's been doing this since he got out of the University of Florida. 23 years old, joined the Miami Herald, one of the great newspapers in America. A listener notes, Carl, that the Miami Herald infamously is known as the newspaper that staked out Gary Hart with Donna Rice. I'm sure
that's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. And it was funny because you always, you know, all of us in the press are used to being accused of having a liberal bias, but it was, you know, Gary Hart was a liberal Democrat, the front runner for the presidency, and you know, he invited the. I mean, it was sort of a well known, not much of a secret that he was he liked the ladies, and he's also married. But he invited the press rather arrogantly at one point to follow him, and we had had information from some people that, you know, he was seeing this woman in Miami, and this was when he was sort of launching his campaign. And you know, nobody is judging, you know, that part of it, except that if you're running for, you kind of want an honest person running for president, and here's a guy who clearly wasn't. So we were the paper that wrote about that controversially, but I do think it was a story, and I do think we handled it fine.
Carl Hiaasen, who's been around for a long time doing his thing, is still a relatively young guy. I would imagine you feel like you've got a few more miles in the tank.
I sure hope so. I mean, it's still fun for me, and hearing from the readers keeps you going. I mean, it's just great when you hear from readers. I get a lot of letters from kids about the kids' books, and it's still a kick, and I still enjoy every day. And of course, the interesting times we're living in now makes the column writing rather easy. There's no shortage of material or inspiration. So as long as that's, you know, as I feel like, well, I'll keep writing. I mean, a lot of times, Jim, writers don't retire. I mean, they just sort of keel over in the keyboard one day. That's it. Boom. You know, and that's probably where I'll end up too.
What do you make of this world we're in now, where a lot of the discussion involves discussions about fake news?
I love it because most of the people that are talking about fake news are the ones that are generating the fake news, the fake stories about election fraud, massive election fraud, which didn't happen, ever occurred. These kinds of things pop up, and they're just literally somebody making it up. But those are the people throwing out the allegations of fake news. You know, that Obama was using a microwave oven to wiretap Trump Tower, which never happened, and there's no evidence at all that it ever happened. And it was just an invention, just something that popped into somebody's mind that thought it would be a distraction. So the press has always been under attack. Remember what I was telling you about sort of coming into the business in the age of Richard Nixon. I mean, he had all machinery in place. He had an enemies list of people in the media. He had Spiro Agnew, who later, of course, got caught taking bribes and had to resign as vice president, another crook. He had Spiro Agnew on the stump attacking the media all the time, the elite liberal media. There's nothing we haven't heard before. It shouldn't worry reporters in the least, or dissuade them or discourage them. Our job is to go out and dig stuff up and antagonize whoever is in power. Obama wasn't a great fan of the media either, believe me. Mm-hmm. Nor was Bill Clinton, and with good reason. So, I mean, this is nothing new. It's just a lot more heated rhetoric than ever was before. And you can't stop the press from doing the job, just like you can't stop the FBI from doing its job just because you happen to fire the head of the FBI. I mean, these are institutions in our country, and they don't crash and burn if one individual is removed from the institution. So this stuff rolls on. It's really nothing new. It's just it's a lot more overheated these days than in recent years, for sure.
Well, lastly, do you think President Trump will wear well as a president who continues to?
I think those of us in the press are going to have a lot to write about. I mean, every day is a new surprise. His own people are surprised. This is a guy that didn't expect to win. He admitted he thought he was going to lose. So this is, you know, he's going to provide a lot of material. I don't know how he's going to wear well. The polls are pretty universally on the money now that he's not wearing well at the moment. He's not popular at all. The healthcare thing in particular, there's a lot of scared people in this country right now. And, And that's going to be a big factor. I mean, all the bluster and all the bragging and the nonsense that he, you know, the rambling that he does, that could all be forgiven if there was, you know, if he replaces the healthcare system with something better. But if you throw a lot of people out of the medical umbrella of coverage right now, you're going to have a lot of those people voted for him, and they're going to be ticked off big time. So, we'll see what happens. Who knows? You know, who knows? You ride it through every day. This is a very strong country. This is a very tough country. We've been through a lot, you know, Vietnam, Iraq. My lifetime, the stuff that's happened, 9/11, you know, I think we can survive Donald Trump. I'm not too worried.
Carl Hiaasen, it is always a pleasure to talk with you, and congratulations on your continuing exceptional work. The latest is Razor Girl.